Hi, welcome to the Word Radio Broadcast, a ministry of Faith Baptist Church in Ontario, Ohio. I'm Pastor Dave Davenport. Today we're studying in the book of Romans, and we're in chapter 1. We trust you'll have your Bible open and stay with us for the next several minutes as we go to the Word.
Book of Romans in chapter 1. I'm going to direct your attention down to verse 13. We got verses 1 to maybe 15 or 16 really last time, but we have to kind of have a run in a little bit to get where we want to go. And last week we saw the first half of the chapter did deal with the issues of racism. Paul was a Jew and he was wanting to go to Rome. There was a problem in the book of Romans throughout with the Jews and the Gentiles having a difficult time coming together. If you get to chapters 9, 10, and 11, you see a whole lot of things be really deeply drilled into about God's plan for the Gentiles. Those three chapters really are dealing with the issue of God always having had a plan to reach the Gentiles and how that the Jews had fumbled the ball in being promoters of the truth about God. And he was trying to show them verse and chapter over and over again, how God in the Old Testament was constantly saying he wanted the light to get to the Gentiles. And so he was really trying to help the Jewish people realize that there was some things going on. But recognize this, he also deals with the issue there was a blindness in part happening to Israel and that God would one day save them in a day, that all Israel would be saved. And that's going to be during the tribulation. So it's a really interesting perspective. Don't you find that to be fascinating that when we come back to this book in the environment we're in, we begin to find new interesting truths? Paul says in verse 13 of chapter 1, "Now I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, that ofttimes I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto," or hindered hitherto, "that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are in Rome also." Now, I'm going to stop right there because this is our run-in. And what I want you to get your mind around is that he has right here reiterated the whole issue of a division that is absolutely going to exist wherever there is people groups. For instance, if you have a group of people who are playing football and you've got the red team and the blue team, there's going to be a lot more esprit de corps amongst the red team about playing football and winning than there would be among the reds and the blues who are going to play against each other over football. Okay, so the game football, now they'll give each other an attaboy, you know, a handshake and good job, boy, you were a worthy opponent maybe afterwards. But you're going to have more of an esprit de corps. Now, on the red team, what you're going to have is you might have some, you know, different people from different nations, but they're all on the same team. And Paul was on the team of the Jewish people back in the day. And then there were people who were Gentiles, and there were people who were Romans, and there were people who were Greeks, and there were people who were barbarians. Now, the barbarians were people who were like, well, anybody who wasn't sophisticated, who didn't speak right or who couldn't read or talk in the Greek language. You know, it was a time of Hellenistic enterprise where they were making roads and they had gotten the Greek language and permeated the world with Greek and things like that. So it was sort of a thing of education, if you will. So the barbarians were people who were deemed uneducated and sometimes just other than, because even Jews were looked upon as being barbarians to Greeks many times, just because Jews were always vilified. My point is this, he's pointing out that there were distinctions. You know, there's only one race, it's the human race. They don't use the word race here. Actually, when it says Gentiles, the word is ethnos. It actually has the idea of something we talked about last time, and that's traditions. People who had certain traditions. You know, there are different kinds of traditions around the world. And those traditions can be very wonderful. They can be troubling. You know, they could be like in India where it becomes a death penalty issue if you kill a cow. Even though sometimes they've had that kind of idea about people worshiping that kind of an entity with people starving in their own midst. You know, it just doesn't work. God gave this to be received with thankfulness, you know, sanctified by prayer and so forth. You and I, we understand that because we've been brought along. We've seen a lot of history. We've been able to draw down on it. We've been able to get our minds around what makes sense and what doesn't. The founding of this country was all based on the things that people had found out before. There was a lot of trial and error before we got here. When we got here, there was a lot of very good, educated men who really had a heart for trying to get it right because it mattered to them. You know what's one gift that's come out of the garbage here of late is that people in the family of God have begun to dig into their Bibles a little bit more. Begun to maybe think a little bit more deeply about what church is, how important it is, or what their values are, or what their convictions are, or how they would stand if it came to their door, you know. We remember the Columbine shooting where the young girl was asked because she was known in the high school to be a Christian, and one of the guys who had a gun, he came up to her and says, "Are you a Christian?" And she actually said, "Yes, I am." And he shot her. And she willingly died. We know that because her journals were saying, "Oh Lord, that I could do more. Oh Lord, that I could make a huge impact. Oh Lord, that I could even give my life if I had to." And not long after that, she gave her life. And we've read about her, even in this faraway state. And to this very day, we remember that girl. And I say to you this morning that Paul understood there were distinctions. He says, "I would not have you to be ignorant. I purpose to come." Why? Because I wanted to have some fruit among you. Now, understand that that's your call and mine right there. You and I are supposed to be purposing to have fruit. It's not going to happen by accident, maybe early on. There was a guy who actually was my neighbor across the street when God saved me, and I had long hair, and I was kind of renegade, and we'd have friends over, and all the friends got out, and they looked pretty renegade too. It was a really rough-looking bunch of guys coming to my house. But after I got right with the Lord, all that stuff dried up. I'm out shooting basketball one day. He's sitting in his garage, lived right across the street from our house. He called into his wife. He said, "Honey, is that David over there?" She told him, yeah, that's David. He said, "I haven't seen any of those," you know, and gave the story. "I didn't see any of those guys around for a while. And man, I was just watching him play basketball." And she said, "Yeah, I guess he started going to church." He said, "Really?" He confided in her at that point. He said, "I think I just saw a halo on his head." And what I'm saying is fruit, right? Because this guy thought he saw a halo on my head. He went to a church the next week. And I am told he got saved thereafter. And I have a suspicion he was the guy that got me through the third year of my college when I couldn't pay my bills. But I never really got the word from him. This has all been brought back to me by the pastor of the church of what had happened there. So fruit can be early on. And yeah, there's going to be some passive fruit. But for the most part, we need to purpose. And by the way, when you purpose to have some fruit, you're going to find God showing up to join you in that because He loves going out and getting some fruit. Okay, He loves that. And He wants to be there with you. We become what? Co-laborers with Him, right? That's what we become, co-laborers. You're not laboring with Him if you're doing your own thing all the time. He wants you to have fun. He wants you to enjoy your day. He wants you to have a life that is full. He said, "I've come that you might have life and life more abundantly." And that means you're going to have life right. Love of the family, love of your wife, love of your children. Those are the things we get to enjoy on spades. Many of us know that people in the world in which we live have had so many hurts and aches and pains just because they never got on the right road early enough. But those of us who found the Lord early enough, maybe we avoided some of the nonsense that's out there. And we become maybe a beacon for God. So we are allowed to enjoy our families, our wives, you know, the things that God had intended for us to enjoy. So what I'm saying is that you have to determine to be fruit bearers. God's Word tells us He ordained you to go bear fruit, but that doesn't happen passively most of the time. God can use your testimony from afar, but the reality is that this is a work. Okay, this is work. We're called to be soldiers. We're called to be husbandmen, which is a farmer. We're called to this, shepherds, and we're supposed to be those people who are on call for our master. So here we have him saying, "I purposed that I might have some fruit." And if you circle the word "that," that's what it was. He purposed that I might have fruit. Now, I don't know when the last time you purposed that you might have some fruit, but I'm telling you, that's what's supposed to be going on. He says, partial reason here is that I'm a debtor. He says, I'm a debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So that as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. So understand, his idea is, I've got a field. I've been planting churches, I've been winning Gentiles, I've been pastoring in Corinth and different places, and he's had a ministry, mostly itinerant, going from place to place and plowing up new ground and starting something fresh. But here he's saying, listen, he says, I'm a debtor. Now, you might want to kind of put a little star by that because of the day in which we live. There is a movement afoot today to get us to kneel and say, you know, you have white privilege and you're bad, you know, because you were born in America. You could make that as an argument. If you live in some third world country, you should be ashamed of yourself, you know. There's all kinds of reasons to feel bad, but frankly, on the big scheme of things, those aren't the things I'm feeling bad about today. The thing I feel bad about is that against God and God only have I sinned. David took Uriah's wife. And when he finally came to his senses, he said, Lord, against you have I sinned. I don't need to kneel to some man. Because frankly, we're all in the same mud puddle. When you look at this and it says, I'm a debtor, Paul understood that he had been maybe a little bit more aloof to those who would be called Greeks and barbarians, to those who would be wise in this world's ways, like the Greeks seek after wisdom. He says, and even those at Rome, and Rome was not liked so much by Jewish people because the Roman world had oppressed the Jews, right? There was a lot of tension in the air at times in that day, as there always will be. You have any kind of a working relationship, there's going to be days when things are going along like a well-oiled machine. The next thing you know, for a couple of days, you're just kind of struggling. That's just the way of it. Families, lives, it's going to be hard. Marriages, you know, this kind of thing. The relationships, wherever there's going to be two humans, you're going to have two sinners. And everybody's got enough on their ledger to be preoccupied with. For somebody to come to me and say, you need to bow down, well, there's an answer to that. The Bible always has an answer to these things. But I want you to know that in Rome, these people had not yet met Paul, and they didn't understand how much his heart felt like a debtor. And yet, all they had as maybe an example of what Jewish people were like were the Jewish Christians, or even Jewish people, but Jewish Christians, they still had the vestiges of being Jewish. Do you know when you got saved, you came with a whole lot of baggage? Do you know that you have certain grooves in your flesh that are unique to you? And when you come into the family of God, that just doesn't go away. You're still going to struggle with those grooves. They're there. They're you. They're who you are. You're made up of the sum total of all your experiences and all the input that's been put there. And you have to recognize that everybody else has that too. One of the things that I'm seeing in our new day now that we've pretty much come out of the coronavirus pandemic mode, you know, lockdown and everything, we're pretty much seeing people are more impatient than ever before. I'm seeing it anyway. Where I go, I see people not patient in lines. I'm seeing them being frustrated with the newness of maybe having to go this way or that. And I get it. I feel it too. I have to rein myself in. Part of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control, and I have to draw down on that. So do you. And so we understand that we all have grooves. And for being Americans, we have certain grooves of impatience, I think, perhaps more than those in third world countries. But when you get to this idea of patience, it's sort of a groove in Americans. You know, we think it's all about us and we need to have it our way. And so I want to read you something from chapter 2. If you want to just flip the page, it's the first couple of verses. Verse 1 says, therefore thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest. For wherein thou judgest another, you condemn yourself, for you that judge do the same things. So if we have a movement out there that's trying to make other people kneel, then you see what he says in verse 3 and 4. He says, thinkest thou this, O man, that judgest them which do such things and then doest the same thing, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? Or do you despise the riches of his goodness and forbearance and longsuffering, not knowing that the goodness of God is what leads us to repentance? And what I'm saying is that he's saying you're judging the Roman people around you, you moralist, whoever you are, you're judging everybody around you, and you're doing the same thing. Now, he gets specific. He says, do you say don't steal, and you steal. That's what's happening in Seattle. You guys stole from me, so we're going to steal from you. We're going to take somebody's business. We're going to trash it, you know. So you've got this kind of thing where when there is no moral compass, this is what you get. Things begin to spiral out of control. And so he's telling them that you're not only out of line if you become a judge, but you're also storing up wrath. You're actually building a case further against yourself. So this is not going to serve you to do this. So this is why Paul can say in chapter 1, I'm a debtor, and not get all wrapped up in that. Well, that concludes today's portion of the message. This has been a ministry of Faith Baptist Church in Ontario, Ohio. And I'm Pastor Dave Davenport. I hope you'll join us Monday through Friday for our verse-by-verse studies. And we hope you'll tell others to tune in as well. If you'd like to contact us and learn more about our ministry, go to faithbaptist1.net. You can also download recent broadcasts on our homepage. We hope you'll make it a point to tune in daily as we go to the Word.